The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
You would allow your beloved husband to be tortured for the sake of your outlaw adopted daughter? We will take his nose first, right to here. It makes for a gruesome sight indeed, and assures that poor Gravis will be forever an outcast.
Why would you be doing such a thing? And yourself claiming to be a man of God?
Why, you ask? Because of your daughter, foolish woman. Because your dear Jilly's evil alliance with the heretic Avalyn could bring about the end of the world. Why are we down here?
Here is where I will find my answers.
Get back! Would you like to see again the world and the living?
Ah, yes. The girl. How sweet that capture will prove. Perhaps I might find time to take pleasure with her before I present her to my superiors.
Where are the guards? And who are you?
A friend of Avalyn Despris, and a friend of Bradwood.
Oh! By the gods, good show! Oh, but you'll get your due, Francis the Fool!
Search every passage and every room! All doors barred and guarded! Now! Now!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 3. Available now from Graphic Audio.
Serrano Legacy, Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1. In Graphic Audio.
What?
Hands on your head.
Don't move.
What's going on?
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Fleet has no place for your kind.
Squeeza, Esme, most recent rank 03, separated by order of Admiral Serrano? Grandmother. She double-crossed us.
Bad news.
What?
Peter Origamos, Consuline's foreign minister. Mother, killed him.
Miranda, you can't expect me to let it go.
Damn and blast, Cecilia. The man had my husband killed. He was a despicable, slimy...
Leave the Familius. I'll take you.
Haltbridge, report all starboard aft teams.
Sir, we've got a peak our chem scan doesn't identify. Something with a molecular weight of 16.
16? Lieutenant, didn't I tell you to look out for methane?
Emergency. We have a potentially explosive gas mix.
Sir, I'm scared. I can't just stand here.
Sure you can. Smartest thing you can do.
No! Don't leave me behind!
No! Don't!
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Terrence Aselford, Amanda Thickpenny, Scott McCormick, Jonathan Watkins, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Nathan Bennett, Johan Detweiler, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Nanette Savard, and Dylan Lynch. The Last Gunfighter, number 14, The Devil's Legion.
Because of the thick growth of trees on the ridge, Frank Morgan smelled the smoke before he saw it. He reined the big Appaloosa called Stormy to a halt, and beside him, the wolf-like cur known only as Wolf stopped as well. Frank didn't like the smell of the smoke. Wood, without a doubt, but there was an undercurrent of something else in it, something that made the hairs on the back of Frank's neck prickle and an icy finger trail along his spine, something ugly.
Come on, let's go see about this.
Frank reached the edge of the pines and rode out to where the ridge dropped off to a broad valley. The Mogollon Rim loomed darkly off to the northeast. Stretching southwestward were miles and miles of prime ranching country, lush valleys between ranges of thickly wooded mountains and hills. The grass in these high country pastures was thick and tall and green. The scene would have been truly beautiful had it not been for the column of black smoke rising from the burning cabin in the valley below Frank. Off to one side was a pole corral, where three horses milled around nervously. They were so spooked, they would probably bust down one side of the corral and run off pretty soon. Frank wasn't worried about the horses. They were far enough away from the fire so that they weren't in any danger from the flames, and if they got loose, they would go back where they came from, in all likelihood the ranch headquarters. He was more concerned with the two bodies sprawled motionless in front of the cabin door. Three horses, two men. The third man was unaccounted for, but the smell in the air that put Frank's teeth on edge told him where that hombre was. It was the smell of burning flesh. The third man was still in the cabin.
Let's go.
When Frank got there, he reined in and swung down out of the saddle almost before Stormy stopped moving. Frank's right hand hovered near the well-worn walnut grips of his Colt as he approached the nearer of the two men on the ground. The man lay on his belly, and now Frank could see the large red stains on the back of his vest. A pool of blood had collected underneath him as well. The man had been shot through the body 5 or 6 times, maybe more. There was no way he could still be alive. The other man lay on his side, curled up almost as if he were simply sleeping. His shirt was bloody too, but there didn't seem to be as much gore. Frank knelt, his eyes narrowing in discomfort from the heat, and felt for a pulse in the man's neck. He found one, faint and thready, but still there.
Bregan?
If that was one of your pards, I'm afraid they crossed the divide, fella. One shot up real bad in front of the cabin. The other still inside.
Sandine!
Is that who did this to you?
His riders. Am I gonna be all right?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Doesn't look good, though.
Them sons of bitches. They shot Wardle through the window. Set the shack on fire. Me and Bracken stood it as long as we could. Then we come out shooting. Bastards was waiting for us. Cut us down.
What's your name, son?
I'm called Roof. Roof Blake.
Anybody you'd like for me to write to?
You mean to tell him I'm dead?
Just in case.
My ma and sister live in Flagstaff. Ma's name is Alma Blake. My sister is Tess. I got wages coming from the Lazy F spread owned by Howard Flynn.
I'll see to it that your ma and sister get what's coming to you, Roof. Don't you worry.
I'm obliged. One more thing.
What is it, Roof?
If you ever see... It's Sandy. Plug that mangy varmint.
Frank thought about what he had learned in the past few minutes. Roof Blake and his two companions had ridden for the Lazy F, a spread owned by a man called Howard Flynn. And gunmen who worked for Ed Sandine, obviously an enemy of Flynn's, had torched the line shack and killed the three cowboys. Frank had ridden into the middle of a range war. Again. Frank went to his saddle, got his shovel, and started digging the graves. Frank pushed the blade of the shovel into the ground so that it would stand up, and turned to see what had raised Wolf's hackles. Frank saw several riders emerge from some trees on the far side of the valley and gallop toward him. He suspected there were more riders for the Lazy F, who had spotted the smoke from the burning cabin and were coming to check it out. Suddenly, one of the men opened fire on Frank.
Seems like this type of stuff always happens.
Leaving the shovel where it was, Frank walked on hurriedly toward Stormy and pulled out his own Winchester. He levered around into the chamber, laid the barrel across the saddle to steady it, and drew a bead. The shooter's hat went flying off. Frank stood there waiting while the four riders milled around, obviously confused and unsure what to do next. After a few minutes of heated conversation, the four men started forward again, but they walked their horses this time and didn't shoot at him. Frank watched them come. When the riders were about 50 yards away, they stopped again, and one of the men, not the one who had been shooting earlier, stepped forward.
Hold your fire, mister. We just want to find out if our pards are all right.
Come ahead, but keep your hands where I can see them.
The men advanced slowly. The spokesman peered past Frank at the two bodies.
That looks like a couple of our friends.
One's Roof Blake, the other's called Bragan. That's all I know about him. Wardell's still in the cabin.
The men turned their heads to look at the shack. The roof had fallen in by now, and one of the walls was about to. The fire wasn't burning as strongly as it had been earlier, but it still gave off plenty of heat.
What happened here?
I rode up and found the cabin on fire, and those men lying out here. They'd been shot as they ran outside.
The trigger-happy hombre scowled at Frank.
He's lying, Buxton. I'll bet a hat he's the one who killed them boys.
I'm telling it like it happened. And I don't much cotton to being called a liar. I'd be willing to bet that Roof Blake wouldn't have liked it either.
What do you mean by that, mister?
I mean that young puncher was still alive when I rode up. He's the one who told me what happened here. And before he died, he said that men who ride for somebody called Ed Sandine were responsible for it.
Sandine?
I reckon you men ride for the Lazy F. That'd be Howard Flynn's spread.
You seem to know a hell of a lot about what's going on in this part of the country for somebody who just rode in.
All I know is what Roof Blake told me, and what I can see with my own eyes. It's pretty obvious there's some sort of range war going on between Flynn and Sandine. And judging by what happened here, Sandine's men fight dirty.
That's because Sandine's a polecat, and he hires men just like him. Gunslingers, hired killers, men who've been riding the Hood Owl Trail. I'm convinced Sandine used to ride that trail his own self before he came down here to Meguion County and tried to act all respectable-like. But once a polecat, always a polecat.
Damn it, Buck, why are you sitting here jawing with this fella? Can't you see he's got to be one of Sandine's men? Look at that thong down Colt. He's a gun thrower, sure as hell.
If I was working for Sandine, why would I still be here? Why didn't I ride off with the rest of his men?
You probably stayed behind to see what poor old Roof and Bragan had in their pockets, damn scavenger.
You're free to search them. I haven't taken anything from them.
By the Lord. I thought I recognized you. I've seen your picture on dime novels. Boys! That's Frank Morgan.
Damn it, Buxton. Now you gotta know I'm right about him. Think about it. What would a hired killer like Morgan be doing around here if he didn't come to work for Sandine? You know Sandine's put out the word that he's looking for men and paying fighting wages.
That's true. What you got to say for yourself, Morgan? You come here looking to hire out to Sandine? Or is he already paying you?
I never heard of the man until about 15 minutes ago, and I'm getting a mite tired of being accused of things. I told you what happened here, that's all I gotta say. Since these fellas were your pards, you can have the chore of burying them. Or you can take them back to the Lazy F, or whatever you want to do with them. but I'm out of it, understand?
You can't just ride away. I still think you were part of the bunch that done this.
What's your name?
If it's any business of yours, which it ain't, my name is Dennis Houlihan. Why'd you want to know?
Frank just smiled thinly and didn't answer.
Looky there, Buck. He's threatening me. He's just as much said that he figures on shooting me.
Calm down, you fool. A man like Morgan ain't gonna shoot nobody unless there's some profit in it for him.
Suddenly, one of the previously silent men spoke up.
Oh, we can take him, Denny. Look at him. He's an old man, about ready for the rocking chair.
You a damn fool, Crenshaw.
The last puncher was a middle-aged black man with considerable gray in the hair under his floppy-brimmed hat and the beard stubble on his jaw.
Don't you know that an old lobo wolf is just about the most dangerous kind?
Shut up, Glover. If you're scared, you can ride back home.
Glover started to turn his horse toward Crenshaw's, but Buxton put out a hand to stop him.
Crenshaw, Houlihan, you listen to me. You keep your hands away from your guns. If you want to fight Morgan, you go back to the ranch and draw your time first, so you won't die as lazy F riders. I don't want to feel compelled to throw my life away just because you went and got yourself killed.
But Buck, this is crazy. Morgan's a hired gun, we all know that. He's got to be working for Sandine.
Frank just shook his head wearily. He put his foot in the stirrup, grasped the saddle horn and reins, and got ready to swing up onto Stormy's back.
He's gonna get away, Denny!
I'm taking him!
Like hell you are.
That brief exchange gave Crenshaw a chance to get his gun out and aim. Wolf was about to go after either Buxton or Glover.
Wolf, no.
Hold it, Morgan!
Buck and Glover had backed up their horses and shucked their saddle guns. The Winchesters were trained on Frank, and although he knew he could knock both men off their mounts, at least one of them was likely to get him, too. Frank lifted his hands, the Colt still in the right one.
Drop that gun.
Not hardly.
I'm farming the Lazy F. You don't think I'm gonna let you ride away after you killed two of my men, do you?
They brought it on themselves.
Crenshaw did sorta nudge Houlihan into drawing.
Yeah. What are we gonna do about this?
Take Morgan to the boss. Let Mr. Flynn decide.
Yeah, I reckon that would be best. If you're not gonna drop that gun, Morgan, at least holster it. Otherwise, there'll be more powder burnt here and now.
Frank lowered his arms and slid the Colt back into leather.
Mount up. We're going to the Lazy F.
And what do you think will happen when we get there?
I don't know. Mr. Flynn's a fair man. We'll tell him what happened and let him decide what to do with you.
Frank stepped up into the saddle, nodding coolly to Buxton.
Let's ride.
Glover hung back to tie the bodies of Houlihan and Crenshaw on their horses. He also got the horses from the corral and loaded up the corpses of Roof Blake and Bragan, too. By now, all the walls of the burning line shack had collapsed, but it would still be a good while before the body of Wardell could be recovered. Somebody would have to come back with a wagon to do that. For now, Glover led one riderless horse and four others carrying grim, grisly burdens as he rode after Frank and Buxton.
For what it's worth, I sort of believe you, Morgan. I've heard a lot of things about you, but never that you went in for bushwhacking or petty thievery.
It happened the way I told it.
If that's true, then Houlihan and Crenshaw were in the wrong when they drew down on you. Not to mention damn foolish.
Yeah, but will your boss agree with that?
Around here, men ride for the brand, right or wrong. We'll see, I reckon.
Tell me about the trouble in these parts.
Between Mr. Flynn and Ed Sandine, you mean?
That's right.
Mr. Flynn come to Arizona Territory 30 years ago, during the war between the states. He was one of the first settlers under the Meguion Rim. Had to fight Apaches for years, and when he wasn't fighting Apaches, he was fighting rustlers and bad men. His wife died of a fever, and he lost their two boys, too. One of them to Apache Arrow, and the other to Stampede.
Life on the frontier was hard and dangerous, even in these days when some folks thought the West was starting to get civilized. Frank had heard plenty of stories like Howard Flynn's before.
Flynn got any family left?
A niece, an old maid from back east who come to live with him when her own folks passed on. Don't think she quite knew what she was getting into, though.
What about Sandine?
He showed up about 5 years ago and bought the Saber Spread. It wasn't right next to the Lazy F. There was one little ranch between them. But the fellow who owned it sold out to Sandine a year later. And that made Sandine and Mr. Flynn neighbors. Sandine bought up some other little holdings until his spread was the biggest in these parts except for the Lazy F.
So then he set his sights on Flynn's ranch.
Well, not exactly. He set his sights on Miss Laura more than he did the ranch.
You're talking about Flynn's niece?
Yeah.
Thought you said she was an old maid.
She is. Must be 25 years old if she's a day. I ain't asked, of course, since that wouldn't be the proper thing to do. You see, Miss Laura was a school teacher when she lived back east, and she knows a heap about art and opera and books and such. I might have mentioned that Sandine wants folks to think he's some sort of respectable gentleman, and I reckon he figured it'd be a good thing if he got himself some culture. Miss Laura's the closest thing to it around these parts, and I don't mind admitting she ain't hard on the eyes neither, in spite of being a mite past her prime marrying age.
So Sandine set out to court Laura Flynn.
Yep, and at first she was mite took him with him. He's the sort that ladies seem to find handsome, and when he works at it, he can charm the stripe off a polecat's back. It was all an act, though, and after a while, Miss Laura figured that out. She must have told Sandine to go climb a stump. Whatever she said, he didn't take it too well. That's when he decided to move in on the Lazy F. Maybe he figures that if he takes over her uncle's ranch, Miss Laura won't have no choice but to knuckle under and marry up with him.
How's he trying to go about it?
Well, we started out losing some cows here and there to rustlers. We had dammed up one of the creeks to make a little lake, and somebody blowed the dam to pieces with dynamite. The flood from that drowned some stock in the pastures downstream from the dam. More than once, somebody shot at our hands while they were out riding the range. A couple of the boys were killed, and several more wounded. We've had other line shacks burned too, but never when any of our hands were around. Until today.
What's Sandine got to say for himself?
He denies that he's got anything to do with it, of course. Says, we're the ones who are trying to start a range war, but it's all a pack of lies. He's behind it, all right.
Over the next hour, they came to a valley nestled between two ranges of low hills with a creek running through the middle of it, and the thin curl of smoke that rose into the blue sky told Frank they were nearing the headquarters of the Lazy F. That smoke had to be coming from a chimney. Sure enough, a few minutes later, they came in sight of a big house sprawled on a bend just above the creek. The two-story center section of the house was built of stone, but several wings constructed of logs had been added. Quite a few outbuildings were scattered around the place. A long structure that was probably the bunkhouse, a cook shack and smokehouse and blacksmith shop, several barns, and plenty of corrals. The Lazy F was an impressive place. Howard Flynn certainly hadn't been lazy during the years when he built this spread into one of the finest in the territory. Several dogs ran out to greet the riders.
I expect you to behave yourself. No fighting with these ranch dogs.
That critter looks like he's part wolf.
Might be. He won't cause any trouble, though.
Unless you tell him to.
A good dog stops more trouble than he starts, just by being around.
What's his name?
Wolf.
And I reckon that palouse you're riding is called Horse.
Nope. His name is Stormy. I used to have a horse named Horse, though.
The commotion created by the dogs had alerted people on the ranch that someone was coming. A long porch ran across the front of the main house. A white-haired man stepped out onto it and gazed toward them. His pose was casual at first, with his hands tucked into the back pockets of his jeans. But then, as he saw what the horses Glover was leading were carrying, he straightened and took his hands out of his pockets. Frank saw him turn his head sharply and say something to someone still in the house. A second later, another man emerged from the house and hurried toward the bunkhouse, the long dark braid of hair hanging down his back flapping as he ran.
That the cook?
Yeah, the boys call him AC Deucey, because that's where he likes to play all the time.
And the white-haired hombre is Howard Flynn.
That's right. And here come some of the boys from the bunkhouse. So don't get any funny ideas, Morgan.
I don't intend to. Believe it or not, Buxton, I'm sorry about the way things turned out. I just want to clear this up and ride on.
At this time of day, most members of the ranch's crew would be out on the range, but there were usually a few cowboys around headquarters all the time, for one reason or another. Four men came out of the bunkhouse and strode quickly toward the main house, followed by the Chinese cook. By the time Frank and Buxton got there, the four punchers had formed a line in front of the porch and stood there with their hands resting on the guns they carried.
What the devil is this, Buck? Who's that with you? Why are those boys face down on their saddles?
They're dead, Mr. Flynn. Blake, Bragan, Houlihan, and Crenshaw. Wardell's dead, too. But he's out what's left of the East Line shack. It's been burned.
Son of a bitch!
Howard Flynn was about 60 years old, but still hale and hearty despite his age. Deep lines scanned his weathered face, but his blue eyes sparkled with vitality. He looked like he could ride the range from dawn to dusk, work from can to can't, and be the last to quit a chore and the first to buy the beer. A damned fine hombre, in other words. Frank liked him right away, instinctively.
You still ain't told me who this hombre is.
He says he's Frank Morgan, boss.
Morgan? The gunfighter?
One and the same.
Damn it. Did that blasted Sandine hire you, Morgan? I wouldn't put it past that skunk to bring in a hired killer.
I never heard of Sandine before today, Flynn. I'm sure as hell not working for him. I don't know anything about this range war between the two of you, except what your foreman here's told me.
You didn't have anything to do with those boys being dead?
I killed two of them, Crenshaw and Houlihan.
And you got the gall to sit there and brag about it? Grab him, boys. We're gonna string us up a gunslinger.
Back off, Flynn. I don't intend to let anybody lynch me, especially not some hot-headed cattle baron who acts before he thinks.
The lazy F-punchers in front of the porch hesitated, not sure what they should do next. They were all armed, but their guns were still in their holsters.
You come on my ranch and dare to point a gun at me? You might as well go ahead and shoot me now, Morgan, because if you don't, sooner or later I'll kill you.
Morgan, you gotta know if you pull that trigger, you're a dead man. I figure you pack 5 rounds in that smoke pole, with one chamber left empty for the hammer to sit on. There's 6 of us. You can't get us all.
Not unless I get 2 of you with one bullet. Might be an interesting challenge.
The gall of the man. I never seen the like.
A woman stepped onto the porch.
Uncle Howard, what's going on here? I heard angry voices.
Frank couldn't study her closely because he still had his gaze fixed on Howard Flynn, but he saw enough in a glance to realize that the woman was blonde and quite attractive. Buxton had said that she wasn't hard on the eyes, but Frank thought that was an understatement. Laura Flynn, and that was obviously who she was, based on her calling Flynn Uncle Howard, had a great deal of fresh, wholesome beauty about her.
Laura, get back in the house. It ain't safe for you to be out here.
Good Lord, is that man going to shoot you?
Not if he knows what's good for him.
I don't plan on shooting anybody unless I have to, miss. But your uncle here threatened to have me lynched. I don't plan on setting still for that.
Lynched? Is he telling the truth about that, Uncle Howard?
He killed 2 of our hands. And he's a gunfighter, a notorious killer. What he did was the same as murder.
Don't know if I'd go so far as to say that, boss. Houlihan fired the first shot, and Crenshaw got off around 2 before Morgan plugged him.
Mr. Houlihan and Mr. Crenshaw are dead. That can't be.
And Bragan, and Wardell, and the Blake kid, too. Morgan's bound to be working for Sandine, so he's probably had something to do with killing them, too.
Is there something in the water in this country that makes everybody deaf as a post? How many times do I have to say that I didn't have anything to do with burning that line shack and killing those 3 punchers?
You admitted gunning Houlihan and Crenshaw.
Because they drew on me first.
That's sure enough true, boss. I told those boys to settle down, but they wouldn't do it. Told them if they were bound and determined to brace Morgan, they ought to come back here and draw their time first. Just so we wouldn't have a problem like this.
My men ride for the brand, and I back them all the way.
That's an admirable quality. Why don't you try using some common sense with it?
Glover had pulled his mount and the other horses to a stop about 40 feet behind Frank and Buxton. Now he swung down from his saddle and came up to the group.
Somebody come get these horses and help me with the bodies. Things happened out there the way Morgan and Buck say they did. So I don't see that there's any call to string up Mr. Morgan.
No, it's Mr. Morgan, is it? Since when did you start giving the orders around here, Glover?
I just don't like lynch talk. Don't seem right.
I don't like the idea of a man being lynched either. Uncle Howard, if something like that is necessary, the law will do it.
The law? When I come out here, girl, the only law was my pistol. It got enforced, too, until this country settled down some. And sometimes it's still needed.
But not today.
Frank lowered the heavy Colt and slid it back into leather.
I'm tired of this, Flynn. You're not gonna lynch me or tell your men to shoot me, or you'd have already done it before now. I've told you what happened. I'm riding away now. I'm out of this.
Wait a minute. You say Sandine burned down the line shack?
His men, anyway. That's what Rufe Blake told me before he died. I don't know if Sandine was there personal, like.
Sandine probably wasn't there. These days he likes to pay other men to do his dirty work. Men like you, Morgan.
I don't have any interest in working for Sandine. Fact is, I'm just passing through this part of the country. I thought I'd ride on down to Phoenix.
You do that. Best you keep moving, because I ain't gonna forget you pointed a gun at me. Next time I see you, I'm liable to kill you.
Come on, Wolf.
Frank glanced over his shoulder. Buxton was riding after him.
I told the boss I'd see to it that you got off Lazy F range.
But what you're really doing is making sure that nobody tries to dry gulch me, right?
Nobody who rides for the Lazy F would do a low-down thing like that. Least of all the boss.
Well, I'm glad for the company anyway.
Did you mean that? About riding down to Phoenix?
I did. There's a settlement somewhere around here, though. Wouldn't mind stopping there for a night or two. Like to replenish my supplies, maybe give my horse a little rest. Stormy's like the rest of us. Not as young as he used to be.
He looks like he's still got plenty of sand. So do you, Morgan. A word of advice? The boss meant what he said. If he ever runs into you again, he's liable to slap leather.
I hope it doesn't come to that.
I do too. Because you'd kill him. And then you'd have every waddy who ever rode for him on your trail, trying to even the score. There ain't a finer man in Arizona Territory than Howard Flynn.
I can believe that. I liked him as soon as I saw him.
Is that so?
Of course. Oh, he had his back up because five of his men were dead. I'd think less of him if he hadn't been mad enough to chew nails and spit out thumbtacks. He just directed some of his anger toward the wrong man.
Meaning you.
I'm sorry about Crenshaw and Houlihan. They didn't leave me much choice.
No, I don't reckon they did. But I ain't over fond of you my own self. Those boys were too proddy. But they were still Lazy F.
I know what you mean. Is that your way of saying the same thing Flynn did? That you'll try and kill me if you ever see me again?
If it's on Lazy F range, I'd have to think long and hard on it.
Fair enough.
Frank couldn't ask a man not to feel loyalty toward his friends.
What about that settlement? Is there one around here?
Yeah, a little place called San Ramo. It don't amount to much, but you can buy some supplies and get a drink and a night's sleep there, if you're ever mind to. It's just the other side of the Verde River, maybe 5 miles from here. If you need to go someplace bigger, you could ride up to Prescott. It ain't too far. But that'll take you in the wrong direction to go to Phoenix.
San Ramo will probably do.
You just keep to this trail, and it'll take you to San Ramo. You ought to be there by nightfall. Hasta la vista, Morgan. I hope our trails don't ever cross again.
Vaya con Dios.
Frank watched until Buxton had vanished around a bend in the trail. Then he lifted Stormy's reins.
Let's ramble on, Stormy.
As Buxton had predicted, Frank reached the little settlement of San Ramo before night fell, but it was late in the afternoon before he got there. Calling the place a town would have been generous. A wooden bridge crossed the fast-flowing Verde River, and beyond it, San Ramo consisted of one block of business buildings and a dozen or so cabins. There were a couple of stores, a blacksmith shop, a saddle maker's, a cafe, a Baptist church at one end of the town, and a Catholic mission at the other. And not surprisingly, since it was located in the middle of a ranching region, four saloons, where the cowboys from the surrounding spreads could come to blow off steam. Although Frank liked a cold beer from time to time and could appreciate a shot of fine whiskey, he wasn't really interested in the saloons at the moment. The cafe was more what he was looking for. A home-cooked meal and a cup of hot, strong coffee sounded mighty fine right about now. There was no hotel as far as he could see, but he spotted a corral and a livery barn behind the blacksmith shop. If push came to shove, he could sleep in the hayloft of that barn and be reasonably comfortable. With those thoughts in his mind, Frank wasn't paying much attention to the Verde Saloon as he rode past it.
Oh, shit.
Frank twisted in the saddle, and he saw a man bursting through the back wings at the saloon's entrance, guns blazing. Frank's hand had started toward the peacemaker on his hip before he realized that the man on the boardwalk in front of the saloon wasn't shooting at him. Instead, the man had writhed around so that he was blasting back through the flapping doors into the saloon. Stormy shied away from the gory spectacle. Frank tightened the reins to bring the horse under control.
No, Wolf.
A man stepped out onto the walk. He held in his hands the greener that had just been fired. He looked up at Frank, managing to seem both alert and bored at the same time. He was lean and dark and well-dressed, wearing a black flat-crowned hat over a white shirt, black vest, and gray whipcord trousers stuffed into high-topped black boots. A black string tie hung around his neck.
You see something interesting, friend?
Well, it's not every day you see a man blown nearly in two with a greener. You gonna check and make sure he's dead?
Oh, he's dead all right.
His guts are laying all over the street.
You know, I was almost in the line of fire. If that buckshot had spread out a little more, some of it might have hit me or my horse or my dog.
Well, that would have been too bad. I might have been more careful about where I was shooting if the bastard had been trying to kill me at the time.
I know the feeling.
Come back down to the saloon later. I'll buy you a drink.
Frank just waved a hand in acknowledgement of the offer without looking back. He hitched Stormy to a post. Then he walked back out around front and went to the cafe. A man sat on the front porch of the cafe, puffing on a pipe.
Howdy, mister. That your dog?
He's his own dog. But we travel together most of the time.
I like that answer, mister. You sound like a man who knows dogs.
This one, anyway. Wolf, sit. Wait out here for me.
He does what you tell him?
Most of the time. Unless it disagrees too much with his idea of what ought to be done.
Willard Donahue. Local character and hanger-on.
Frank Morgan. Just passing through.
Morgan? The shootist from over Texas way?
Not that many people remember that I come from Texas.
Oh, I've read every yellowback ever written about you, Mr. Morgan. Man cultivates a life of leisure like I do. He has time to read and learn a lot. Take that little incident down the street as you were riding into town. I know who those fellas are and why they were doing their damnedest to kill each other. It's an interesting story.
Why don't you come inside and tell me about it? Since it's nigh on supper time, I'd be happy to buy you a meal.
Well, that's mighty nice of you, Mr. Morgan. That's another thing I know about you. You've got a generous nature.
Come on, old-timer. I got a feeling there's a stake in here with your name on it.
As soon as Frank opened the door of the cafe, a blend of delicious aromas drifted out. Often, the food in these cowtown hash houses was terrible. But every so often, a fellow found one with an exceptional cook.
Mr. Donahue, what you doing in here? I told you I ain't feeding you on the cuff no more. You got to pay what you owe before you get another bite.
Now, Mary Elizabeth, don't get in such an uproar. This kind gentleman here's offered to stand me to a meal.
You let this old rapscallion hornswoggle you into buying his supper? No offense, mister, but you look smarter than that.
Mr. Donahue's gonna sing for his supper. Or at least tell me a story.
About the shooting down at the Verde.
I heard the shots, but I don't want to know nothing about it. You two sit down. Steak or pot roast?
Steak.
Me too. Rare enough for it to walk to the table itself.
Two steaks with all the trimmings coming up.
Frank and Donahue were the only customers at the moment, so they had their choice of where to sit.
Miss Mary Elizabeth Warren is the salt of the earth, and probably the best cook between El Paso and San Francisco. You don't know how lucky you are to have stopped here, Mr. Morgan, but you'll soon find out. That is, if you don't mind eating a colored woman's cooking.
It's pretty hard to tell the color of the cook by the taste of the food.
Very true. You'll think Mary Elizabeth's food was cooked by angels. Caleb Glover is a damn lucky man. He keeps company with Mary Elizabeth. He'll probably marry her one of these days and take her off to some ranch. And that'll be a sad day for those of us here in San Ramo who've come to depend on her.
This fella Glover rides for Howard Flynn's Lazy F.
You know Howard?
We met.
Then you probably know about the trouble between him and Ed Sandine.
I heard some talk.
Those two hombres who shot it out in the Verde... They both work for Sandine. Moses worked for Sandine, I should say, since from the looks of it, the only wages he'll be drawing from now on will be in hell.
Jack Moses?
Something had struck him as familiar about the dead man's face, and now he recalled it. Jack Moses was a hired gun he had last seen up in Idaho a good 10 years earlier. Frank hadn't known that Moses was even still alive.
Yeah, that's right. The man with the shotgun is Vern Riley. I expect you've heard of him, too.
Frank nodded. Riley was reputed to be middling fast with a 6-gun, but the greener was his weapon of choice. Frank should have realized who he was.
If they were both working for Sandine, why did they start shooting at each other?
The way I heard it, they had an old grudge against each other. Riley was here first, rode into these parts several weeks ago, and signed on with Sandine's saber spread. Sandine's been hiring men who are good with their guns.
So I've heard.
Well... Jack Moses showed up a few days ago and hired on, too. I guess him and Riley tried to put their hard feelings aside while they were both drawing wages from Sandine, but I reckon it didn't last. One of them probably said something that the other one didn't like, and before you know it, all hell broke loose. They forgot that they were supposed to be on the same side. Don't know how Sandine's gonna feel about that. He lost a good man in Moses. Or a bad man might be a better way of putting it.
Donahue looked intently at Frank.
I don't reckon a fella like you would have any trouble signing on to replace him, Mr. Morgan. If you're looking for a job, that is. For all I know, Howard Flynn's already hired you. Howard's gonna have to start fighting fire with fire, if you know what I mean.
I'm not working for anybody, just riding through on my way to Phoenix.
Uh-huh. We got us a hellacious range war about to break out in these parts, and the Drifter just happens to show up.
Believe what you want, but it's the truth.
Maybe so. But how long do you think a man like you will be able to stay out of it once the bullets really start to flying?
Frank was saved from having to answer that question by the arrival of Mary Elizabeth Warren with their suppers.
I got a bowl of greens and some gravy for sopping them biscuits. I'll bring them right over. Coffee for the both of you?
Yes'm.
Ain't you the polite one now? Dig in, gentlemen.
As evening set in, the cafe filled. By the time Frank and Donahue were finished with their meal, most of the tables in the place were occupied.
Mary Elizabeth, there's a good business, sure enough. I figure either Howard Flynn or Ed Sandine had hired a cook for them in a minute. Howard's got a leg up, though, since Caleb Glover rides for the Lazy F. I'm hoping that once him and Mary Elizabeth marry up, he'll let her keep the cafe open. But I reckon it ain't likely.
Are folks around here worried about the problems between Flynn and Sandine?
Wouldn't you be? They both like to ride high on the hog, so I reckon it was inevitable that there'd be trouble betwixt them. When a couple of big skokum he-wolves like that start after each other, innocent folks almost always get caught in the middle.
Anybody giving any thought to bringing the law in?
Which law? The Saber and Lazy F spreads are so big they lay in several different counties. Do we send for help to Sheriff Bucky O'Neill in Yavapai County or Sheriff Glenn Reynolds in Gila County? The sheriff in Maricopa County might want to get in on it too. Problem is, they're all just as likely to say that it's the other fella's worry, not theirs, as they are to help out.
How long you think it'll be before the whole thing boils over?
Probably not very long now. Sandine must have 40 guns working for him. If he ain't ready to make a move, I don't reckon he ever will be.
Frank and Donahue finished off the fine supper with apple pie for dessert, washed down by a final cup of coffee. After living off his own trail cooking for a while, Frank thoroughly enjoyed the meal.
I surely am obliged for your generosity, Mr. Morgan.
Call me Frank. I enjoyed your company, and I have a clearer picture now of what's going on around here.
It ain't a pretty picture, though, is it?
No, but luckily, it's none of my business.
It could be.
A shrewd gleam crossed Donahue's eyes.
What do you mean by that?
It just so happens that I'm the mayor of San Remo.
Frank's eyebrows rose in surprise.
Yeah, it's a hell of a note, ain't it? When a layabout like me gets put in charge of anything. I guess folks decided I had the time to devote to taking care of the town, since I don't do much anything else. But that ain't neither here nor there. As I was saying, I'm the mayor of this here burg, and as such, I'm offering you the job of town marshal of San Remo, Frank. The whole country may go to hell around us, but I got a hunch you could keep order here and keep the town from getting caught in the crossfire.
I don't normally wear a badge.
You have before, though, so it ain't like I'm asking you to do something you've never done.
I'm on my way to Phoenix. I've been mixed up in enough shooting scrapes in my life.
I can see why you feel that way. But the plain fact of the matter is, we need you here, Frank.
Sorry. If I was you, I'd write to the sheriffs of all three counties involved and ask them to send in some deputies. Surely you'll get some help that way.
Well, maybe. Don't know if it'll be in time, though.
Maybe it will be.
You sure? The pay wouldn't be much, but maybe I can talk Mary Elizabeth into feeding you for free.
Sorry.
Well, I tried. I'm obliged to you for listening to me, at least, Frank.
Why don't you meet me here in the morning? We'll have breakfast together before I ride out.
Sounds like a mighty fine idea. I'll see you then. Yep.
Donahue nodded and walked out of the cafe, waving farewell to Mary Elizabeth as he left.
You take care of yourself, you old scoundrel! Can I get you anything else?
No, that was mighty fine. Maybe you can tell me, though. Is that livery barn behind the blacksmith shop the only one in town?
Yes, sir. Fella who runs it is named Jasper Culverhouse.
Thanks.
Wolf waited patiently on the porch. Frank signaled for him to follow, then untied the reins and led Stormy down the street toward the blacksmith shop. Jasper Culverhouse proved to be the man Frank had seen earlier, trundling his cart toward the scene of the shooting. Now he had the gory remains of Jack Moses stretched out on a table behind the blacksmith shop and was already knocking together a crude pine coffin by the light of a lantern. Culverhouse was short and mostly bald, with the thick-muscled frame of a man who worked with hammer and anvil all the time. As Frank led the Appaloosa around the corner of the building into the rear yard, Culverhouse looked up from his work and gave him a friendly nod.
Something I can do for you, mister?
I need to put my horse up for the night.
Well, sure thing. Got a half a dozen empty stalls in the barn right now. Just pick you the one you want. Grain's in the bin. I'd take care of it myself, but I got a chore that's a little more pressing right now. Since you'll be doing all the work, how about I just charge you 2 bits for the night?
Sounds fair. Need a place to leave the dog and some food for him, too.
Sure. I can take care of him. Does he bite?
Not if I tell him not to.
Well, no charge for that, then. I'm a man who likes a good dog, and he looks like a fine one. Maybe not quite tamed. Sort of like his master.
Is there a place to stay in this settlement?
Yeah, there's a couple of saloons rent out rooms, especially if you want a gal to go with it. Or you can sleep in the hayloft, which probably has less bugs in it than the beds in them saloons. That'll be another 4 bits, though.
Again, fair enough.
Frank nodded toward the corpse.
I hear that's Jack Moses, the gunfighter.
Yeah. I'll clean him up a mite and drape a sheet over his middle where that buckshot tore him up so bad and prop him up on a board in front of the place in the morning. You know, folks like to take a look at somebody even a little bit famous, especially if he's gotten himself killed. Burial won't be until the middle of the day tomorrow, so everybody ought to have time to come by and take a gander at him.
Once Frank put Stormy in one of the stalls in the barn and tended to the Appaloosa's needs, he decided to stroll down to one of the saloons and have a short beer before he turned in. Vern Riley had promised to buy him a drink. The polished hardwood bar ran down the right side of the big room and then turned to run across the back wall as well, underneath the second floor balcony. Frank headed straight for the bar.
Frank Morgan!
Frank turned and saw Vern Riley sitting at a table toward the back of the room with two other men. One of them wore the rough clothing of a saddle tramp, but the other was well-dressed in a dark, sober suit that made him look almost like a preacher. No, Frank corrected himself, the hombre looked more like a school teacher than a minister. He had sleek dark hair and a narrow mustache. Something told Frank that he was looking at Ed Sandine.
Have a seat and join us, Morgan. I'll buy you that drink I promised you earlier.
I don't recall introducing myself when we spoke earlier.
Hell, you don't think I recognize the notorious Frank Morgan? A few years back, I saw you clean out a saloon where some of Van Bergen's gang had holed up. I didn't take a hand since it was none of my affair either way, but I haven't forgotten it either.
That was a time ago.
Sit down. I'm Vern Riley.
I tell you the truth, I recognized you too, Riley.
The gunman patted the shotgun that lay on the table.
Yes, hard to miss this baby. Most people know it's what I prefer. I reckon it's like a calling card for me.
Riley gestured toward the roughly dressed man.
This here is Carl Lanigan.
Lanigan?
Morgan.
And this is my boss.
Edward Sandine. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Morgan. I've heard a great deal about you.
Frank signaled over the bartender. He quickly came up to the table.
I'll have a beer.
Sandine picked up the bottle and poured himself a drink.
It's a wise man who doesn't muddle his brain with whiskey. Luckily, I wasn't wise to start with, so I have nothing to lose.
No, I wouldn't say that, boss. You're just about the smartest man I know.
Yeah. If I was so smart, I wouldn't have hired two men who hated each other's guts now, would I?
Moses had it coming. Carl can tell you. He was here and saw the whole thing.
That's right. Moses started it. He was to blame for what happened.
Well, regardless of all that, I'm short-handed now.
Sandine turned to look at Frank. Frank understood the conversation probably had been worked out ahead of time so that Sandine would have a good excuse for offering Frank a job at fighting wages. Gunfighters pay.
Morgan! Morgan! It is you! Damn your hide! I thought I recognized you, and now I'm gonna kill you, you son of a bitch!
Frank didn't react suddenly. He just turned his head toward the sound of the angry voice and saw a man standing at the bottom of the stairs, gazing at him with murderous hatred in his eyes.
Take it easy, mister. I don't know you.
Maybe not, but I know you. I've been keeping an eye out for you ever since you killed my old man 5 years ago in Wichita.
Damn it, Hanley. Can't you see I'm talking to Mr. Morgan?
Sorry, boss. I got a score to settle with him that goes way back before I was riding for Sabre.
I didn't kill Lester Hanley. I put a bullet through his arm, all right, when he called me out and wouldn't let it go, but that didn't kill him. Later that night, he got drunk, fell in a water trough, and drowned.
That's a damn lie. I heard all about how you shot my paw in the back.
What you heard were lies. I'm willing to overlook what you just said, Hanley, if you'll just let it go.
Let it go? Hell, I'm gonna kill you, Morgan!
You got it to do, then.
You bastard!
Frank glanced up toward the balcony. He saw a burly, gun-toting man in long-handled underwear reach the railing and stare down in shocked horror at Hanley's body.
You done killed my brother, you some bitch!
Ah, damn it. That makes three men I've lost today for no good reason.
Sorry for the one I accounted for, boss. Like I told you, though, Moses had it coming. And I don't see what else Morgan could have done other than stand there and let the Hanley brothers fill him full of lead.
I know. I couldn't ask any man to do that. Mr. Morgan, are you all right?
Are there any more of them?
No, that's all.
I'm sorry. They wouldn't listen to reason.
That sort never does. Even though they rode for me, I hold no grudge, Mr. Morgan.
I appreciate that.
However, now that I'm even more shorthanded, maybe you'd care to entertain a proposition I have for you.
You don't even have to make the offer. I'm not interested in working for you, Sandine.
Oh, why not? From everything I've heard about you, you've done the sort of work I have in mind before.
Maybe you haven't heard the whole story.
Hey, listen, Morgan. We've obviously gotten off on the wrong foot here.
Two of your boys trying to kill him might have had something to do with that.
Stay out of this, Vern. This business is between Mr. Morgan and me.
We don't have any business to talk about.
I'll at least have the courtesy to listen to what I have to say, Morgan. There's a problem I want handled.
Howard Flynn?
The man has it in for me. He's spreading lies and vicious rumors about me. I suspect his men have rustled some of my stock. Flynn's trying to run me off my range, and I won't have it. He has to be made to stop.
By killing him?
By any means necessary.
Don't make the mistake of thinking that you can hire me to murder somebody. We're done here, Sandine.
I don't like it when people tell me no, Morgan. This isn't over yet.
That's where you're wrong.
Frank was headed for the livery stable.
Hello, Frank. I hear there was a shooting inside the Verde. Couple of Sandine's men got themselves killed.
Oh, damn it, Donahue, don't sneak up on a man like that.
Sorry. I just thought maybe you'd like to come down the street to the Muggy Own with me and have a drink.
Frank's thirst reasserted itself. He had noticed the Muggy Own saloon earlier. It was a much smaller, quieter place than the Verde. When he looked at it now, he saw that there were only a couple of horses tied up at the hitch rack in front of it.
Well, I didn't get the beer I went in there for.
Come on, then. I think I can promise you there won't be no trouble.
Frank saw several men at the bar and a couple more at one of the tables. Donahue gestured toward that table.
Let's sit down here. I want you to meet these fellas. This is Simon Wilson, who owns one of the mercantiles, and Ben Desmond, who owns the other one.
Business rivals, eh?
Yes. But tonight we're on the same side.
Simon Wilson was a big man with a pugnacious jaw. Desmond was smaller and more dapper.
Simon means we both want what's best for San Remo.
That's right. Those fellas at the bar feel the same way. That's Tom Williams, Jimmy McCain, and Alonzo Hightower. Alonzo owns the Muggy Own here, and Tom and Jimmy have the other saloons in town. Next to them is Vincente Delgado, the saddle maker, and Homer McCrory, pastor of the Baptist Church.
You got a Baptist preacher to come into a saloon?
The Lord associated with sinners for a good cause, Mr. Morgan. I can do no less.
The other two are Roy Thurman and Jace Winslow. They own small spreads near here.
Quite a gathering. Just why have all these solid citizens gotten together here tonight?
The door of the saloon opened, and Jasper Culverhouse hurried in.
All right, now look, I got those Hanley brothers laid out, but I gotta get back to them pretty soon. You ask him yet?
Dadgummit, Jasper, you got all the tact of a locoed bull.
Well, I just don't have a lot of time to waste. I'm busy.
Neither do I. Is this about that marshal's job again?
You don't know what it means to us, Mr. Morgan. The men in this room are all business owners in San Ramo, except for Miss Warren, and she assured me personally that she supports our efforts. She just didn't feel comfortable coming into a saloon. She's a very religious woman.
I can attest to that.
And Roy and I represent the other fellows who own small ranches around here. We need your help, Mr. Morgan, and we need it bad.
All hell, she's about to break loose.
You want me to take that marshal's job and tamp down the feud between Howard Flynn and Ed Sandine?
Somebody's got to. Look around, Morgan. We're good men, but we're not gunfighters. Nobody's going to listen to us. We can't go up against Sandine's army of hired guns. Howard Flynn's a good man, but he's blinded by hate and anger right now. And his crew, even though they're not hard cases like Sandine's, is a mighty salty bunch. If open warfare breaks out, no one in this part of the territory will be safe.
Now, you've seen yourself the kind of men Sandine has working for him, but they put a lid on their fight while they were here in town. If you were to Marshal Morgan, they wouldn't have any choice.
I think you're overestimating me a mite. You can't believe everything you read in those dime novels.
Enough if it's true. What do you say? Will you take the job, Frank? If you don't, sooner or later that street out there is going to run red with blood. The whole muggy own range will.
You got yourself a marshal.
Donahue looked surprised, as if he had expected Frank to refuse. He got over it quickly, though, and put a big grin on his bearded face. He handed Frank a battered tin star. Frank pinned it to his shirt.
That's fine, Frank, just fine. I can't tell you how much we're obliged to you for your help. I guess we'd better start calling you Marshal Morgan now.
Don't you want to know how much wages are?
As long as some free meals over at the cafe are included, like Mayor Donahue mentioned earlier. Whatever you folks can pay me will be fine.
And we'll all be pooling our funds to come up with your wages, Marshal. And Mary Elizabeth has already agreed to feed you for her part.
What are you contributing?
My persuasive and diplomatic skills, of course. And you may not know it, but I'm also the only attorney at law in these parts, and the magistrate of San Ramo.
So you're not just the town bum like you claimed.
He didn't say that.
All right, Marshal. What's your first order of business?
Mr. Culverhouse, when you get done preparing the bodies of Jack Moses and the Hanley brothers, don't display them. Don't give Sandine's gun throwers any more notoriety than they already have.
Yeah, don't make no never mind to me, Marshal. It ain't like I charge folks to look at them or anything like that. I'd just as soon put them in the ground and be done with it.
That's exactly how I want folks to feel about it. There's nothing glamorous about a gunfight. Now, I think I'll take a walk back over to the Verde. The sooner they find out that I'm the law, the better.